Hey, hey. you on our team. You're too slow and fat.
This is weight bias.
Don't you care how you look?
Those with the serious disease called obesity face weight bias every day.
You're not the right fit for this job.
And blame themselves.
I wish I was different.
Weight bias hurts.
Let's stop weight bias.
Be part of the solution.
Go to stopweightbias.com. A public service message from Obesity Action Coalition.
Good afternoon, good evening, and you're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh. Welcome to another edition of Ebony Spectrum. This week, we'll be looking at the election coming up. We got about less than 11 days coming, and this is from Friday from our girl, Lene Vinay.
Long time no see, I feel, but it's a lot of work being done on the ground. It's only got 11 days until the election. But I would be remiss if I didn't get up here and talk about VP Harris' opportunity agenda for black men. And if you haven't heard, here's what it includes. Investing in black-owned small businesses. Legalizing recreational marijuana nationwide, she's on our side. Policing reform, obviously. Addressing health challenges that disproportionately impact black men, like sickle cell disease, mental health, and diabetes. More education, training, and mentorship programs to combat unfair and unnecessary barriers to black men's success, like degree requirements. An expanded child tax credit, $6,000. And down payment assistance for first-time home buyers. Now, when I first heard this, I thought, now we're cooking with grease. For a promising presidential hopeful to openly and outwardly claim black men as needing to be a protected class before winning an election is damn near unprecedented. But y'all telling me some of y'all still up here talking about pandering? Let me tell you the difference between pandering and actually showing up. Many of us believe that because black communities are continuously targeted with fluff and memes and rappers, that politicians are virtually incapable of enacting, endorsing, or legislating policy on our behalf in tangible ways. Now, pandering is just saying what you want to hear, or using inauthentic tools to connect on a cultural level, or looping black people in with efforts centered on other marginalized groups of people, claiming we should be cool because it benefits black people too. For decades, the political arena has damn near been terrified to stand up and naming black people, particularly black men, as a demographic that is in need of and deserving of America's help. America literally owes us far more than concepts of a plan, people. And here you have one, plain as day. VP Harris wants to give out $1 million forgivable loans of up to $20,000 to black entrepreneurs, y'all. And in addition to that, she wants to raise the small business startup tax deduction from $5,000 to $50,000 cash. How many of y'all own a small business? Raise your hand. I do. Do you know what I could do with $50,000? Meanwhile, a group of Americans emboldened by Trump-era villainization of affirmative action tried to sue Fearless Fund for giving money to black women-owned businesses, temporarily siphoning off support for a whole sector of black business owners. And look, now the same people mad the admission rates declined at the Ivy Leagues. Not only does she want to legalize weed, and thank God for us down south, goodness gracious, but she's not just trying to undo the harm marijuana convictions have brought on black men and their families, but she also wants to make sure that black men have a seat at the table of the ever-growing cannabis industry. You know, the one that the dude bros over on the West Coast have been running? Well, black men literally sit in jail on overwrought weed charges? You can't tell me you still clinging to that lie that she threw thousands of black men in jail for weed. Not when this has always been her stance. No! Common sense police reform? Great. Yes. Because did you know that Congress still has not passed the George Floyd Act? Not because Democrats are liars or don't really want to get anything done, but because 80% of people who vote Democrat do not vote down ballot. So while I'm glad a lot of y'all got out there and voted on the first day of voting, I do hope you at least tick them boxes all the way down so we can help VP Harris and Congress finally ban chokeholds and no-knock warrants. This is why we keep saying we can't divest just yet. Too much stuff that's still on the table. Meanwhile, Donald Trump talking about giving police total immunity? That's a whole nother conversation for a whole nother day, because that involves exacerbating the already too well-known truth that many people in this country become police officers just so they can have complete authority over people that don't look like them. And because policing in America was birthed in slavery, we know exactly who those people are. Now, let's talk about education. VP Harris wants to provide resources to amplify educational avenues like HBCUs, while under Project 2025, when they go to eliminate the Department of Education, they will be obliterating funding for HBCUs. Are you nuts? And last but not least, I do want to talk about this emphasis on healthcare or health issues, rather, child tax credits and assistance for first-time homebuyers. Now, these things affect and benefit a lot of people. Some even explicitly say on a website that they're going to benefit others as well. But before you get your panties in a bunch saying, oh, here we go, there it is, see, it's not really about us, Savannah, slow down. This is just a living, breathing example of when black people get free, everybody gets free. The fact of the matter is that black people significantly and disproportionately absorb all of the isms that affect subordinate identity groups, Black, woman, poor, queer, disabled, blackness serves as a catch-all, intersectional meeting place for all forms of oppression because even if no other minority groups existed, all the ways in which they are discriminated against would fall into the bucket of blackness. That's how it started. Except poor white people. So what this also means is that when that intersection is targeted with actual solution-oriented efforts, our fixes become the fixes for a lot of other people, i.e. poor whites, white women, Latinos. And for the specific black men who are saying because it benefits those people, they don't feel genuine or like it's another political trap versus the $1,200 check somebody stamped their name on. I don't know, it sounds to me more like you're actually more comforted with being oppressed as long as your ego is being soothed rather than being economically liberated while having to take a scoop of humble pie on the side. A nationwide, she's on our side, policing reform, obviously, addressing health challenges that disproportionately impact black men like sickle cell disease, mental health, and diabetes, more education training and mentorship programs to combat unfair and unnecessary barriers to black men's success like degree requirements, an expanded child tax credit, $6,000, and down payment assistance for first-time home buyers. Now, when I first heard this, I thought, now we cooking with grease. For a promising presidential hopeful to openly and outwardly claim black men as needing to be a protected class before winning an election is damn near unprecedented. But y'all telling me some of y'all still up here talking about pandering? Let me tell you the difference between pandering and actually showing up. Many of us believe that because black communities are continuously targeted with fluff and memes and rappers, that politicians are virtually incapable of enacting, endorsing, or legislating policy on our behalf in tangible ways. Now, pandering is just saying what you want to hear, or using inauthentic tools to connect on a cultural level, or looping black people in with efforts centered on other marginalized groups of people, claiming we should be cool because it benefits black people too. For decades, the political arena has damn near been terrified to stand up and naming black people, particularly black men, as a demographic that is in need of and deserving of America's help. America literally owes us far more than concepts of a plan, people. And here you have one, plain as day. VP Harris wants to give out 1 million forgivable loans of up to $20,000 to black entrepreneurs, y'all. And in addition to that, she wants to raise the small business startup tax deduction from $5,000 to $50,000 cash. How many of y'all own a small business? Raise your hand. I do. Do you know what I could do with $50,000? Meanwhile, a group of Americans emboldened by Trump-era villainization of affirmative action tried to sue Fearless Fund for giving money to black women-owned businesses, temporarily siphoning off support for a whole sector of black business owners. And look, now the same people mad the admission rates declined at the Ivy Leagues. Not only does she want to legalize weed, and thank God for us down south, goodness gracious, but she's not just trying to undo the harm marijuana convictions have brought on black men and their families, but she also wants to make sure that black men have a seat at the table of the ever-growing cannabis industry. You know, the one that the dude bros over on the West Coast have been running? Well, black men literally sit in jail on overwrought weed charges? You can't tell me you still clinging to that lie that she threw thousands of black men in jail for weed. Not when this has always been her stance. No! Common sense police reform? Great, yes. Because did you know that Congress still has not passed the George Floyd Act? Not because Democrats are liars or don't really want to get anything done, but because 80% of people who vote Democrat do not vote down ballot. So while I'm glad a lot of y'all got out there and voted on the first day of voting, I do hope you at least tick them boxes all the way down so we can help VP Harris and Congress finally ban chokeholds and no-knock warrants. This is why we keep saying we can't divest just yet. Too much stuff that's still on the table. Meanwhile, Donald Trump talking about giving police total immunity? That's a whole nother conversation for a whole nother day, because that involves exacerbating the already too well-known truth that many people in this country become police officers just so they can have complete authority over people that don't look like them. And because policing in America was birthed in slavery, we know exactly who those people are. Now, let's talk about education. Phoebe Harris wants to provide resources to amplify educational avenues like HBCUs, while under Project 2025, when they go to eliminate the Department of Education, they will be obliterating funding for HBCUs. Are you nuts? And last but not least, I do want to talk about this emphasis on healthcare, or health issues rather, child tax credits, and assistance for first-time homebuyers. Now, these things affect and benefit a lot of people. Some even explicitly say on a website that they're going to benefit others as well. But before you get your panties in a bunch saying, oh, here we go, there it is, see, it's not really about us, Savannah, slow down. This is just a living, breathing example of when black people get free, everybody gets free. The fact of the matter is that black people significantly and disproportionately absorb all of the isms that affect subordinate identity groups. Black, woman, poor, queer, disabled, blackness serves as a catch-all, intersectional meeting place for all forms of oppression because even if no other minority groups existed, all the ways in which they are discriminated against would fall into the bucket of blackness. That's how it started. Except poor white people.
Vinay, Vinay, running some truth down to you. But then it was so nice we had to play it twice for you so you can really understand what she was saying. Next up, we got an excerpt from Karen Hunter from her show from yesterday, which is Tuesday. And also, we are going to hear from our friends at Native Land Podcasting and see what they're thinking about for the election.
Let's go to Cheryl in Queens, who said that she had a cousin that went to the Trump Nazi rally yesterday. Say more, Cheryl. Hello. Cheryl.
Hi, Karen.
Hey.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Welcome.
Hi, Dr. Black.
Hey, how you doing?
I just love to listen to you. I really, really do. I love to listen to you too, Karen, but when you have him on, oh, my God, he makes my mind just...
Listen.
Oof.
You do know that I feel the same way. You know, and
this,
I'm here as a vehicle. Let me just be very clear. You're never listening to me. You're always listening to the people we bring on. Like,
us
this
together,
is intentional.
Us together. Us
yeah,
together.
I'm just saying.
Yes, yes, yes. Yesterday was my birthday.
Happy birthday.
I turned 69, and I'm so happy.
Yeah.
I called my cousin because her birthday was the day before. And I called her to, say hi. And I asked her about her cousin, right? But she thought I was talking about her mother, right? And she said, oh, she's not here. She went to the Trump rally. I nearly lost it on the phone.
Mm. What's this person's relationship to you? She's your first cousin, second cousin?
She's my first cousin, yeah. She's a twin, and she's my first cousin. Her twin is Muslim and a beautiful person. Both of them are beautiful people. But I just don't understand.
Like, went willingly, not just to see, but went because that they're aligned with this ideology. And what are they aligned with exactly?
I don't know. I want to have this conversation with her. And we almost got into it a while back, you know, about her whole thing with this Trump thing. She wanted to even move to a red state so she could be in line with that, you know.
She's a black woman?
Yes, and the crazy thing is my aunt, God bless her, my aunt is Aunt Baby. She was, like, right there with Malcolm X. Like, my uncle, her husband, Uncle Johnny, was the pallbearer for Malcolm X, sat right next to Betty Shabazz. Like, really? Like, I don't even understand this. I don't even understand this with her.
I'm a little speechless. Listen, Cheryl, I feel you, but I do think there's, like, that Venn diagram, Dr. Black, where there's, like, these ultra, you know, black people who somehow Trump resonates with.
Mm-hmm.
And they are under the impression that Malcolm X would somehow be on board with either not voting or aligning with Trump. You know how, like, was it Marcus Garvey that was down with he and the Klan had an agreement because they were like, oh, we want the Negroes out too.
Right.
We want to go back to Africa. Okay,
right.
Well, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. Let's align because our, you know, is it some of that? Like, can you make it make sense? And Cheryl, happy birthday to you and thank you for calling.
I think, yes, I can make some of this make sense because there are two levels of this. One of the things that has happened in America to all Americans, including us as Black Americans, is once you go through the school system in America, America sets a person up to say, if you have some value, if you have some human worth, if you do, it will be expressed. It will be known by the measures of power you are able to wield. If you have some value, you're supposed to have some power. And that power is supposed to be demonstrated. It's supposed to be illustrated in some public way. So people dream, they're planting in our heads this dream of power and the ability to wield power. This is why people all over America, I don't care if they're Democrats, Republicans, what people do agree to is they want America to be the greatest power on the planet. See, that right there sets people up. People got to be very careful. It sets people up to participate to one degree or another in constructs of power that absolutely violently oppress other people, because we're willing to do the oppression, most people, if it will result in our own elevation in terms of power. Because power is the means and the measure of achievement in America. This is why people think of King, they think of Malcolm X, because these were human beings, these were men with power. They had influence in the community. And we think power is the means by which we really live an abundant life. And because of that, most people want one piece or another of it. And this is the second part. This is the problem. People are trying to figure out, how much power can I have and how much oppression am I willing to do in order to maintain it if I don't have to see it?
Yeah. As long as I turn on my faucet, I get water. I don't really care how
I don't care where the water came from. I don't care if I don't care who filtered it. It doesn't make me any difference whatsoever. What I want is the ability to turn on faucet and get water. And then I boast that we have running water in America. See, I don't care where it came from. I never even know. But what I do is start comparing this to other countries. Ah, ha, ha. See, the way I know America is greater is because some of these other countries, y'all don't have running water. Uh-huh. But they have running integrity.
Ooh. I would venture to say, and I don't know if people would be honest with themselves, that they probably couldn't define integrity today, and they definitely aren't exhibiting it, not behind closed doors.
All right, we're doing consumption instead of character.
Yeah.
Ooh. Ooh.
I love you, and I can't stand you at the same time.
Native Land Pod is a production of iHeartRadio in partnership with Reason Choice Media.
Welcome home, y'all. This is another edition of Native Land Pod, but it's a mini pod. And today we are doing election projections, despite the fact that, sadly, DraftKings hasn't been smart enough to sponsor our show. Nevertheless, we are betting women and men today. So we're going to place our wagers on who we think is going to win the election and why. What do we do if Donald Trump wins? So that's the podcast. What are we doing? Who's kicking us off?
I just want to say I 100% do not believe Donald Trump will win, but I want to say I feel that way not based on any scientific reasons. I feel that way based on the sheer will of Black women. We are spiritual beings having a human experience, as Latasha Brown says. And my mind can't compute anything else. I think the media has intentionality around creating these narratives around the race is so tight. Y'all know how I feel about polls, people introducing polls. Like, it's 15 polls a day saying 15 different things. And it's meant to agitate. It's meant to keep us on the edge. When if we all just focused on, I'm gonna vote on election day, I'm going to do early voting, I'm going to get other people to the polls. That's our only Black job right now. So that's what I'm focused on. I do not think we will see another Donald Trump presidency. That is my declaration. It's beyond my hope. It is my declaration. So that's how I feel about it.
Yeah. Andrew Gillum.
How you, Angela? You've been talking about your angst, Angela. So I want to hear.
I want to hear Andrew
angst,
first.
Go right ahead. I'm still absorbing.
Okay, so I have a lot of angst, but I think most of this has to do with my control issues. I do not like for things to be close. Close games give me anxiety. And overtime. Sports experts, you know all about that.
I know that feeling, girl. I don't like it either.
That gives me anxiety. And so I like for things to be like, it's a clean break. We like know exactly where things stand. And unfortunately, for us right now, that is not where things stand. I think even traditional pollsters are being a lot more conservative in their approach based on what happened in 2016, frankly, with Hillary Clinton. And while she did win the popular vote, as we talk about all the time on this show, by 3 million votes, she did not win the Electoral College. So, you know, when I think about the states in play, Michigan, I'm worried about the uncommitted vote, and given the size of the electorate, the number of votes that Hillary Clinton lost Michigan by in 2016, I'm really worried that the uncommitted haven't been properly addressed around the Israeli-Gaza, the Palestinian conflict. I have some concerns about Arizona. I have concerns about Pennsylvania, and there, I mean, for a number of different reasons, working class voters who are Black, brown, and white. I have concerns about the Black male vote in particular in Pennsylvania, and it being kind of the tie breaking the just enough to get over the hump. I have concerns about, I said Pennsylvania, Michigan, Arizona,
Wisconsin,
Nevada, I feel a little bit better about. Wisconsin, I'm also worried about, and not just for Kamala Harris and Tim Walz, but also for Tammy Baldwin. You know, so I mean, I do have some concerns numerically. And at this point of the election season, y'all, it really is just about who can turn out the votes. So I think that there have been a lot of there's been a lot of time, including for me, focused on undecided voters. I'm not off that yet, but I do know the people that are clear-eyed about who they want to vote for, please go to the polls. Go early in case something happens on election day. We have a good friend of ours, Erin, who was talking about, you know, she wanted that moment on election day. We're like, girl, if you don't, girl, early. It's that same kind of thing. We just want to make sure that there are no mishaps, no mistakes, no threats, no intimidation, none of that going on. And I think my biggest concern, honestly, y'all, is not just about the victory. I do believe that Kamala Harris and Tim Walz have what it takes to get us across the finish line. But I'm deeply concerned about what happens when people embody the threat that they think they are. What kind of violence ensues from the other side? What ways in which they might intimidate voters? The way that they've been gearing up for that now for well over a year. The things that they've put in place in states to challenge the vote. All of those things come into play. And so one of the biggest concerns I have is the fact that I fully believe this election won't be decided on election night. I think it's going to be a battle, and it's not going to just be a slog with the folks who count the ballots in the states. It's also going to be a slog when it comes time for January 6, 2025, whether or not folks will agree to certify election results, which when they've been pointedly asked, they've not been able to answer the question. So I got angst for, that I think I'm carrying for about, you know, 2 months worth of eggs, November, December, and January. That's legitimate, though.
Well, can I just say, when I say I'm confident about the will of the people. Now, when we come to, I agree with you, we won't know the election results that night. The fake electors are a concern. Yeah. I think combined right now, election deniers and the 2020 fake electors right now represent 37%. Of the total 82 members of the Electoral College, that is a legitimate concern. I mean, legally, will they vote against the will of the people? So that definitely gives me angst. I should be clear about that. I think she will win the popular vote. I think she will win the swing states. Will people accept the election results they don't like? But a lot of people are concerned that she doesn't have it in the bag yet, and I think that's a good place to be. So I, all y'all who feel that way, you're not alone. But I just feel, I don't know. I just feel like the ancestors pushing me at the back, like, no, girl, it's time. It's time.
I think, and I appreciate y'all sharing your thoughts on that because they're influencing me some, but I am checking in with my gut and sometimes my head and my gut betray one another.
Yes, indeed.
I had a gut feeling the morning I woke up in November of 2018 when I was on the ballot for governor in Florida. I had a gut feeling. That didn't match my head and everything going into it. In 2016, I was in New York, you know, at the
Javits Center.
And at that time, the idea of a Trump presidency had not even entered into my thinking.
Ever.
It was nowhere near it. I was so thrown off balance that night. I mean, it was just, I'm sure a lot of us were. But my gut didn't say, didn't warn me. And my head sure as hell didn't suggest anything different. We're 2 weeks out from the election, and I will just quickly say where my concern lies. My concerns lie right now with white women and how they will perform. If they are going to do 53% for Trump, then I think we lose given the gender gap that exists right now. We need them desperately to check in with their conscience. We need them desperately to put themselves first, not their sons, not their husbands, not their fathers, but themselves. I worry about an enthusiasm gap on the left. If all of us truly know what the consequences are, if the sky is falling every election, then why is the sky falling this time? And why is it falling going to be different for me? Good, bad, or in between? So I think there's an enthusiasm issue that has to be closed. And I don't think it's been closed yet. And then my third big fear is the Senate and the House. There's a reason Donald Trump did rallies in New York City. There are three very important pivotal congressional races that he feels his presence, if it could boost enough Republican enthusiasm in those areas, could they hold those seats? In Florida, Ron DeSantis went against the legislature, but he had the courts and he drew his own maps, got rid of two black seats, black access seats, and they were replaced with a total of three white access seats. And all three of those seats went Republican, from Democrat to Republican. And that is how Speaker Johnson is Speaker Johnson. I worry about the House, and I fear that the Senate is already likely lost. And in that circumstance, the Trump win would be absolutely detrimental to everything we believe and we stand for. The good thing about these three concerns, if there was, is that there's still time to affect them. There's still time for white women to decide for themselves how it is they're going to affect the turnout of this election. Whether they want to stay clamped to the past or define their own future, I still think there's time on these House seats for the enthusiasm to build that we need and folks to show up and show out and vote for their candidates of choice. And the enthusiasms can still be addressed. If right now you are busy worrying about what the polls are saying and not doing anything to move people to the polls, to change those, polls are predictive, they say. It gives you, they're snapshots in time, but in some ways those trend lines tell us where things may be headed. And if you're watching that and we about to crash into a damn brick wall, then I would do what I could to avert the brick wall. And I think these warnings should wake all of us up. This race is far too close in too many key places, far too close. And y'all, I can't even get to the after, because I think the after is bound to be chaos. I think in some ways, Donald Trump is running for the presidency for his freedom, but I also think he's running for chaos to undermine whatever the outcome is, so that there is a divide in this country, and that divide continues by helping to keep him out of jail, creating negotiating room for some kind of a collapse. If the opposition is strong enough, some kind of a deal to be made on his criminal piece here. And I know I may sound conspiracy theorists here, but I think Donald Trump all along has been running for his freedom.
I do too. Mm-hmm.
And I think at the end and the beginning of the day, if there is a divide in this country, he can marshal that divide towards some kind of negotiated outcome for himself.
Okay.
All of that's bad for the country, but I do think that those are the things that sort of
if he loses, Andrew, the Republican Party will abandon him. At that point, it's like, oh, great. Not Trumpism, but Donald Trump. Because at that point, they can say, okay, the problem with Trump is done. Like, we got 4 years of Vice President Harris. There's no need for us. Like, he doesn't have the vice grip on them that he does right now.
If the people are still with him, he will still be the titular leader of the party.
They will bow
to him. Just because they had a chance to get rid of him. He could have been old news before, except the party he built is loyal to him. This is all, again, in the regiment of fascism.
Becoming president again, though?
He may never become president, but he may pick the next one.
Okay, let me ask you guys this. Do like a quick round of like, who thinks the Republicans are going to win the House? Who thinks, or the Democrats? Who thinks Republicans, Democrats, Senate? Who thinks Republicans, Democrats, presidency? Can we do that quick round?
Yeah, let's do
Andrew, you win last. House.
House, Democrat.
Okay.
Senate, Republican. White House, Democrat.
Okay. Tiff, what you got?
Same as Andrew.
Okay. I am going to go out on a limb and say that I think the Senate is going to surprise us and somehow they eke out a victory, and it's going to be Dem House, Dem Senate, Kamala Harris presidency, not on election night, maybe a week later.
That is positive for you, because for a long time you were like, I don't know, guys. This is like positive.
I don't know still, but this is what I need to bet this for my nerves. I'm going to even say I just am being different from y'all on the Senate piece. I think the Senate is the toughest race, the toughest races that the Democrats have is the Senate. I think that they've made some miscalculations. In particular, I'm thinking about the Black woman that's running in Indiana. Like, why would you not be competitive in states that you have not traditionally been competitive? Kentucky has a Democratic governor. Like, why? Like there are places where traditionally they would say we can't win, and they could have won if they would have just invested some resources.
Well, but even outside of like Black folks in the Senate, because I think, and I do want to correct, I did see all you guys' comments because I was saying, well, there are no Black women in the Senate. And everybody LaFonza was like, what about LaFonza Butler?
I did.
I remember saying that when we were talking about the Black women running, and I was like, they would be the right now. There are no Black women in the Senate. So forgive me.
I thought you meant there wouldn't be if they didn't win, which would be true.
That is what I was trying to say, I would have absolutely acknowledged LaFonza Butler.
We love her. Yes. We've interviewed her.
Yes. I would have acknowledged her in that moment. So my apologies. But I think even outside of Black women running, there's just some Senate seats out there that are
John Tester
in Montana. I don't know what's going to happen there. I think Colin Allred might be able to pull it off.
I think he might, too.
Like, nobody likes Ted Cruz. Like, why do y'all keep sending Ted Cruz to us? He's y'all's problem. Keep him at home. I cannot see. Yes, it's very strange. And Vice President Harris is there this week in Texas. And I think that will we were talking in our group chat that Texas is not in play for her. But in that Senate race, we keep getting promised Texas is going to be a purple state. This might be the election cycle.
Why do we think that Colin Allred could win that seat, but she couldn't win?
Because it's more of a local issue there. I think Colin Allred he's focused on Texas. She's focused on the country. So there are some policy points that she takes that I think might run contrary to the interests of the people in Texas, where Colin Allred may have.
I think he's got everything to do with Ted Cruz.
his opponent.
And Ted Cruz is just genuinely unlikable.
They're saying even by everybody. In Maryland, Kamala Harris has a 10-point advantage over Angela Alsobrooks, which is also fascinating. I'm always interested when people split
tickets. I think she's going to win.
Splitting tickets, and largely what happens in these split tickets is the fall off.
Yeah,
is the voter fall off, not so much Trump and the Democrat or the Democrat and a Republican, but the fall off that takes place. And I'll just qualify. I said Mexico because that's his preferred vacation spot.
Yes.
Everybody is sort of tongue in cheek.
We remember. I found interesting about that. Well, that's my point with these Republicans. It's so much scandal, you literally can't keep up. But during that whole debacle when he was going to Mexico, this is how you know don't ever come to us talking about our community, okay? Because we ride. Her, she was in a group chat. Y'all remember that? Ted Cruz's wife was in a group chat who leaked her ass. They leaked the text messages the friend group.
Y'all want to go to Mexico? We got a house. We're going to get out of this storm. We'll have electricity. Everybody bring the kids.
Listen,
it'll be great.
Our group chat none of our group chats would never ever. You couldn't convince me if somebody came and said, no, but we got this. I'm like, then somebody hacked into somebody's phone. We would never ever, it wouldn't occur, even if we were mad at each other. Like, we just don't move like that. And I'm like, y'all ain't got no community.
People that do make stuff out of group chats, they get summarily dismissed.
Well, that's a mini pod.
No, it's not a mini pod. It's just this mini moment.
And we've reached the conclusion.
I approve
this
message. And that is a great conclusion. Let the church say, Amen.
So we all agree that Vice President Harris is going to win.
Yes.
And by the way, guys, mine is an admonishment.
Thank you. That's how I feel, Andrew.
Yeah. Well, can I ask, Andrew, before we go, because you said something, I just want to ask a quick question. Mm-hmm. You said that your gut in 2018 mm-hmm. and your head were different. Do you feel comfortable sharing what your head told you and what your gut said?
My head told me we were going to win, and my gut that morning was unlike anything I had felt all the way up through the campaign. When I went to vote, I thought, you know what?
I knew it too.
They're not going to, there's a reason there's never been one before.
To start a podcast with Riverside, all you need is a concept and a way to record it. Here's how.
I got to be honest. When you were talking the whole time, your tone made me very uncomfortable. I felt like Davis or Jackson about to get in trouble. Well, you were so serious. The whole time he was telling his thoughts on the election.
Well, let me just say, that's why it's an admonishment.
But it's only true
if we do what we have to do.
And even if you think about what happened, I will tell you, Tiff, like, and we've talked about it a little bit on the show before with Andrew's race. Like, Andrew ain't the only one that needed therapy after that race. Like, you couldn't have told me Andrew was not going to win. You could feel it. You could feel it. And that's why I'm saying, like, there is something really important. Like, even if you went over hearts and minds, if those hearts and minds don't take their asses to the polls,
come on,
it matters not. And I do believe there were votes that were not counted. I know I sound like an election denier.
No.
But Florida is a different beast, and they will play a mean, evil, tricky game. And so what you have to do is outperform
and
the evil,
multiply.
Right? You got to outperform the evil. You got to show up in numbers
where
they can't trick it or trade it or do whatever they do. You have to make sure that there is no room for a hanging chad.
That's
why I'm saying, like, you can feel the tide is changing. You can feel people are ripe and ready, but if ripe and ready don't move,
you gotta move.
You know, so I'm with on that.
We gonna be in Florida. We looking forward. We coming to Florida.
And to Angela's point, we'll multiply that, right? Multiply Florida by 49 others.
Yeah, Pennsylvania, and Arizona, Michigan.
Come on.
And all the places where they're messing stuff up. Like, we didn't even talk about it today, but the Muslim Democrat that got kicked out the rally.
Yeah,
that cannot happen.
That's a fumble. That's a huge fumble.
Why? I hope Kamala cussed somebody out about it. Like, what are y'all doing?
Cuss them out in public.
Help us
in
help
public.
You.
That's like, a great idea, Andrew. Like, you cannot do that.
Well, before we go, I just want to remind the folks that we are coming to see you, FAMU. I asked before we began, I've been asking this question to everybody. I'm curious, our viewers, but I just want to know who y'all think is the more obnoxious crew, FAMU or HU. I feel like FAMU and Howard people are anywhere in the world. They just rah, 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 we ready? So I'm going to see up close and personal
that
FAMU spirit.
There it is.
I'm an honorary.
They're at us.
They always this when they see each other.
That's it.
That's what y'all do, right?
Don't get bit.
And then they were mad because Andrew, they were like, "Hi, Andrew ain't got no FAMU stuff in his background." FAMU people go hard. So
Andrew,
we're looking forward.
I'm coming up.
It don't capture.
Well,
the whole
you better move it over
y'all.
So they can see it.
There are levels. First of all, I'm here. I'm the
you FAMU.
Well, we're a T-shirt
through and through. Through and through.
What should we wear to home? Because we'll be there.
Orange and green. We're wearing
orange and green.
I'll have orange and green.
You're
going to
wear
orange and green with denim. And Tiff, this was your idea. You're going to be in denim in one of these
spots. I'm going to wear orange. What? In the cooler weather, I do have some denim. But okay, we're going to see. Orange and green and denim is what we're wearing.
That's
okay.
It. Come through.
All right. FAMU
Wednesday,
right?
Welcome home, everybody, and happy homecoming.
Thanks, y'all.
October 31st, whatever that day is. October 31st.
That is a Thursday.
It is also
October
Halloween.
31st.
Bring your costume.
We'll
Tiff is dressing up as a rattler.
Yes.
Tiff is dressing like a voter.
Oh, great.
A voting rattler.
Voting rattler.
A denim wearing
voting rattler.
Y'all, this reminds me of that, you know, when family leaves and you walking down the street. Goodbye.
Yeah. Well, all right. Bye.
Well, all right. Well, okay.
All right. Now. Days for the election. Right. He's still talking to y'all.
All right.
Okay. Get home safe.
Well, all right.
Did you take a plane?
Call me. Love
call
you.
Me when
did you
get
take
home?
Grandma to
tell your mama?
Oh, you left that dessert.
What about Cousin Pete?
Come get your mama.
Goodbye. Good night.
Bring some water with you. Might be in line a long time. Put your seatbelt on.
Look, they be there. Pack the kitchen.
Lock your door. You know it ain't safe in these streets.
Lock the door. You know, them street lights coming on.
You know that.
Don't
you know that.
Now,
you know that Joe down the street got a Trump van sign up, don't you?
We have stopped recording. Is that right?
They should leave all that in there.
News breaking in the last hour. Violent rhetoric directed at former Republican Congresswoman Liz Cheney by Donald Trump is now being investigated by Arizona law enforcement as a possible death threat. Here's how Vice President Kamala Harris responded to Donald Trump's remark that Liz Cheney should face, quote, rifles in her face.
He has increased his violent rhetoric, Donald Trump has, about political opponents, and in great detail, suggested rifles should be trained on former Representative Liz Cheney. This must be disqualifying. Anyone who wants to be president of the United States who uses that kind of violent rhetoric is clearly disqualified and unqualified to be president. Representative Cheney is a true patriot who has shown extraordinary courage in putting country above party. I have also thought a lot about what this means in terms of our standing in the world. As Vice President, I have represented the United States of America around the world. And what I know is that when we walk in those rooms representing the United States of America, we have the earned and self-appointed authority to then talk about the importance of democracy, the importance of rule of law. And as a result, people around the world who are fighting for freedom and opportunity hold us up as a model. America deserves better than what Donald Trump is offering.
All of this bringing us back, of course, to the choice facing we the people, the voters, in 4 days. We have heard now from the generals who served under Donald Trump, men like General Jim Mattis, General Mark Milley, General John Kelly. We have heard from former White House officials, aides like Olivia Troy, Miles Taylor, Sarah Matthews, Anthony Scaramucci. We have heard from Kevin Carroll, who told us on our air about his 5-year-old son who knelt and prayed at the grave of General Kelly's son to comfort him while Donald Trump sped away from Arlington National Cemetery after casually calling our veterans, quote, suckers and losers. We have heard from national security and intelligence chiefs, people who briefed Donald Trump inside the Oval Office. People like Sue Gordon, who warned us on our air yesterday that Donald Trump will make our nation less safe and alienate us from our intelligence allies all around the world. And now that Trump's rhetoric has veered into such dangerous territory that it is right now currently under investigation, I feel compelled to share the question I get asked more than any other when I'm off this set, which is this: where is George W. Bush? I understand better than most that these days he chooses to speak through his actions, through the incredible work of his library, to his daily dedication to democracy and honoring our country's wounded veterans. But these are the comments we're talking about right now in the United States of America from someone running to hold the job he had, to be our president. He said this about a critic and supporter of his opponent.
She's a radical war hawk. Let's put her with a rifle standing there with 9 barrels shooting at her, okay? Let's see how she feels about it. You know, when the guns are trained on her face. You know, they're all war hawks when they're sitting in Washington in a nice building saying, oh, gee, Will, let's send 10,000 troops right into the mouth of the enemy. But she's a stupid person.
So this morning I re-upped my question to President Bush's office about whether anything might change his mind about staying silent ahead of the election next week. An advisor said he's not going to insert himself into this political moment, but in light of the violent nature of the threat toward his former vice president's daughter during the time she served him, and as a dad whose own daughter just last week bravely entered the political fray campaigning for Kamala Harris, I thought today it was important to share some of George W. Bush's past statements about what America does and what Americans do when they face threats.
Every milestone of liberty was considered impossible before it was achieved. In our time, we must decide our own belief. Either freedom is the privilege of an elite few, or it is the right and capacity of all humanity. Yeah.
There is a line in our time, and in every time, between those who believe that all men are created equal and those who believe that some men and women and children are expendable in the pursuit of power. There is a line in our time and in every time between the defenders of human liberty and those who seek to master the minds and souls of others. Our generation has now heard history's call, and we will answer it.
And on the work of his post-presidency, which is beautiful, honoring the men and women who have been wounded in the line of duty, here's George W. Bush talking about that on the Today Show.
Our country is blessed to have people who are willing to sacrifice for something greater than themselves.
At a young age, I realized how lucky we were to live here, and I just wanted to give back.
I wanted to draw attention not only to their courage, but to the fact that they've contributed once and they need to know they can contribute again. People ask me, do you miss being president? The answer is not really. But I miss saluting people who volunteer to wear the uniform, and all four of them did. How can we help these great Americans transition from the military to civilian life? They've got visible wounds, they've got invisible wounds. But all four of these vets are willing to stand up and say, I had an issue and I want to help somebody else.
He misses saluting the men and women of our military. Here's how General John Kelly describes a vote for Donald Trump when it comes to those men and women, how Trump views those men and women, the men and women George W. Bush lovingly paints and seeks to honor every day.
But he basically said to you that those who died for America on the battlefield were losers and suckers, and he said it more than once.
Yes, but he would say it would always, if something else would get him going off at times, again, McCain, he talked about, and it was like almost a recording, but the point is anyways, he would say it at times, sometimes unexpectedly, but he never could wrap his arms around why people would serve the country in uniform, what was in it for them. I think he just could never wrap his arms around why people would do things selflessly, what's in it for them. I think that's a much more powerful, but that's just me.
So today, we have a right to hope that those who have stood for freedom and celebrated those who have protected it might have a last-minute change of heart in the closing hours of this campaign. And because I once had the job of trying to convince President George W. Bush to sometimes do things he didn't want to do, I say this. On Election Day in 2004, while Air Force One sat parked on a tarmac, because we decided we needed to beam into a half a dozen local television interviews in battleground states to help get out the vote, George W. Bush turned to me and the other communications staffers and said this, quote, whatever happens, Nicole, at least we will know. We left everything on the field. I make this public plea to President George W. Bush in the spirit of doing what he taught me to do. Leave everything I know how to do in service of our democracy and freedoms, the things he taught us to cherish, on the field.
Absolute garbage. The most corrupt, horrible people. These are horrible people.
These are sick people.
We're up against very bad, evil people. It's an evil force.
And the radical left thugs that live like vermin within the confines of our country.
It's the people that surround her. They're scum. All the scum that we have to deal with, that hate our country.
And you can't be president if you hate the American people. And there's a lot of hatred.
I'm out of words. That edition of Pot Meat Kettle brought to you by the candidate who has framed the final days of his campaign for president around the idea that there's an enemy within in this country and he'll use the military to get them. Of course, latching on to a since clarified comment about garbage made by someone who's not running for president anymore was a grasping at straws defensive response on Trump's part, an effort to distract from the Trump campaign's own unforced error about Puerto Rico. The Kamala Harris campaign wants to make sure voters don't forget it in the form of a brand new six-figure ad buy in Spanish, Somos Más, We Are More, will air across the battleground states in the coming days. To quote the ad, this November 5th, Trump will understand some people's trash is others' treasure. Joining me here at the table, actor and activist, my dear friend Rosie Perez. She's heading to Pennsylvania to campaign for Vice President Harris after she leaves us. And Victor Martinez is here, radio host and owner of La Mega, the radio station in Allentown, Pennsylvania. I'm going to get you two together because you're going to be in the same place, but we'll trade digits afterward. Rosie, let me start with you to your reaction to, I feel like we end up on the phone together when we think nothing else can shock us or break us our hearts, and then you hear something like that that shocks us and breaks our hearts. What did you think when you heard that?
Shock. Utter shock. I was angry. I was hurt. That's what people don't really talk about, how racism hurts, how insults like that really, really hurts. But I have to tell you, they picked on the wrong people.
Right? So what's happening? I mean, because I live in this sort of ecosystem where all I hear is it's really hard to break through. This cut through like a hot knife through frozen butter.
It did. And here's the thing that people keep forgetting about what happened on that night. It wasn't just insults thrown at Latinos and Puerto Ricans specifically. It was also African Americans. It was Jews. It was Palestinians. And it was women.
Yeah.
The way they were talking about women was disgusting. But what was the biggest backlash from? Puerto Rican people, Latinos. We don't take it. We don't take it lying down. And everyone's going to see.
So what do you think is going to happen?
I think people are going to go to the polls. There's a lot of people that are on the phone. You know what's sad is that when it did happen, there were certain people in my circles that are Republicans and certain people who are MAGAs, yeah. Right? And I do, there are, that's a distinction, right? Radio silence from the MAGAs for days. These are Puerto Ricans. They had no response. There was no defense. And the other ones, the Republicans that are Puerto Ricans, that are family members of mine, that are friends of mine, they were thoroughly disgusted. They were just as disgusted as I was. And I found that to be very, very hopeful.
What is, I mean, because I think it's instructive for other groups that it feels like he's maligned women. I mean, he started in 16 bragging about grabbing women between the legs and then doubled down in a deposition and said, you've been able to do that for a million years. But there, it feels like there's a numbness. Why aren't Puerto Ricans numb?
Because we have that spirit and we have that pride. You could knock us down 100 times and we will get back tenfold. We will get back up each and every time. You know, the thing that was shocking to me was how Trump didn't get ahead of this. He could have had a John McCain moment. But then again, he's no John McCain, right?
Right.
Remember when that person was in the audience and was throwing disparaging comments to Obama about Obama? And John McCain went over to that woman and said, took the mic and said, no, he's a good man. We think differently, but he's a good man.
Loves his country.
He loves his country. Mm-hmm. That could have been Trump. That could have been Trump, and he would have just, but it's not in him. And that's the point. That's the point. We are looking at character here. And how are we going to vote for someone like that who talks about us like that, who allows negative comments to just go on like that? He has yet to apologize.
Mm-hmm.
He keeps saying, I didn't think it was a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then trying to jump on Joe Biden's mistake. And it was a mistake. At least Joe Biden got in front of it. You know,
and Harris has distanced herself from it.
Yeah, and exactly. But, you know, all the times he's called people that don't agree with him scum, garbage, degenerates, the list can go on and on and on. The nerve that he has right now. And he's only doing it because he's desperate, because he knows he messed up.
Victor, what are you hearing from your callers? You've been so great about giving us real-time inputs.
Well, I'm going to pick up where Rosie was telling you about Austin being proud. I know you want to talk to me because I'm from Pennsylvania, but I'm here to give you a little bit of news. The reason why I'm talking to you from inside of a car right now, it's because I'm in Orlando, Florida. You know why I'm in Orlando, Florida? I'm in Orlando, Florida, where 500,000 Puerto Ricans live because the Puerto Rican community and the Puerto Rican leaders in the community are making a move. They're trying to unify the Puerto Rican community, the 500,000 Puerto Ricans in the Central Florida area and the 1+ million Puerto Ricans in Florida, to try to get them together, energize them, and get them out to vote in Florida on November 5th.
I mean, this is so instructive in terms of the mental shift you need to win elections. I mean, just give me more of where that comes from and this idea that we have the power. I feel like some of what Trump benefits from over and over again is the disempowerment that group. Well, he's just going to do what he's going to do. His base isn't going to care. It feels like what you're both saying is that even people that thought they were aligned with him are reconsidering, and not just reconsidering, but trying to change the outcome of the result, even in Florida?
Well, you have to look at the history of Puerto Rico. Oh, I'm sorry, Victor.
It's funny because I know what you're going to say, and I was going to say the same thing. If you look at the history of Puerto Rico, Puerto Ricans have gone through so much adversity through our history that it's in us. It's in our blood. Like Rosie say, we get knocked down, but we get up again. And again, I've said it in other interviews, there is two things that you don't mess with when it comes to Puerto Ricans, and that's the island and the flag. Those things are sacred to us. We don't mess around. You can play with us. You can make fun of us. You can make fun of our accents. We'll have fun with you. But going after our island, going after our flag, it's like going after our mother. You know, those are things you don't mess with. You just don't mess with those things. And when we spoke the other day, I mentioned this to you. He brought everything from what happened with Maria back.
Yeah.
Right. That wound was healing. We were mad at him when it happened years ago, but then all of a sudden that wound got scratched and now it's bleeding again. And so, this time around, so close to the election, Puerto Ricans are just getting up. I mean, we were talking about what my audience is saying in Pennsylvania and exactly what Rosie was saying. What's getting people madder and madder by the hours is the fact that now Trump has had multiple times to get in front of a camera and say, listen, my campaign doesn't agree with those things. That's not what I believe. But over and over and over again, I mean, while sitting in a garbage truck, they ask him the question about Puerto Rico. And I don't know the comedian, not a big deal. And so that just makes people even madder. Like, okay, so day one, day two, day three, it's not a big deal. I was a love fest. I was proud to be part of the event. So that just keeps robbing the wound, and then the blood keeps coming out, and our hearts get even darker. And so again, look where I'm at. I'm in Orlando, Florida, because they're trying to rally the Puerto Rican community in Orlando, Florida. Again, 500,000 Puerto Ricans just in the Central Florida area, to see if they can mobilize them and get them out to vote.
I may be poor, but I am somebody. I may be on welfare, but I am somebody. I may be in jail, but I am somebody. I may be uneducated, but I am somebody. I am black, beautiful, proud. I must be respected. I must be protected.
Flag is drenched with our blood, because you see, so many of our ancestors was killed because we have never accepted slavery. We had to live on it, but we've never wanted it. So we know that this flag is drenched with our blood. So what the young people are saying now, give us a chance to be young men respected as a man. As we know, this country was built on the black backs of black people across this country. And if we don't have it,
You ain't gonna have it either, because we gonna tear it up. That's what they saying. And people ought to understand that. I don't see why they don't understand that. They know what they've done to us. All across this country, they know what they've done to us.
Listen to the beating of drums, see the sway of hips, the djembe.